It is the State Capitol Report, where we slow down developments, take them one at a time. Today, we're focused on the road to November and election news. So here's our map, okay? We'll look at polling trends in our battleground state, absentee ballot mailings on again, Green Party kept off the ballot. And first, the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In April, the High Court blocked early voting in Wisconsin. We'll reflect on that decision and where we are today. Here's that number for conversation. We're at 800-642-1234. Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief and co-host of the Politics Podcast. Sean, welcome back.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Well, let's take a moment to discuss Justice Ginsburg, who died Friday. And in April, she dissented in the case that tried to extend absentee voting by 6 days in our chaotic primary. And this was the first pandemic-related case before the high court. She was in the minority on this. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, what happened is that the Supreme Court issued a decision involving when ballots have to be postmarked in Wisconsin, saying that they had to be postmarked by Election Day. In this particular case, there was a federal judge ruling in the lower court that would have let them be postmarked later as long as they arrived a week after the election. She was in the dissent. She wrote the dissent and said that her quote was in the story we wrote that day. The question here is whether tens of thousands of Wisconsin citizens can vote safely in the midst of a pandemic. With the majority stay in place, that will not be possible. Either they'll have to brave the polls, endangering their own and others' safety, or they'll lose their right to vote through no fault of their own. And, you know, you mentioned she was on the losing end of a 5-4 decision in that case, but you're just listening to some of NPR's reporting from Nina Totenberg, who covered her for many years. She said that she viewed her dissents as a chance to persuade a future court. So, you know, her words are there for a future court to see. And of course, the way that we view the pandemic and the way that courts view the pandemic is likely changed this year pretty quickly. Strong words there in her dissent.
Well, let's look at the politics now that is going on around that vacancy. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said he supports filling the vacancy, although in 2016 he said he was against filling Supreme Court vacancies in election years. Can you explain the politics here?
Yeah, and I mean, Ron Johnson is not the only Republican senator to have a change of heart on this, but I think what he's saying now in interviews with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wispolitics over the weekend is vastly different from what he said in 2016. So just to go back to 2016, which feels like an eternity ago, it was Justice Antonin Scalia who died in February of 2016. President Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court in March of 2016. But Senator Ron Johnson said at that point that we should wait until after the election to vote on a confirmation of a new justice. Here's a quote from Ron Johnson. He said that puts the American people in charge really by their votes in November in terms of what direction the Supreme Court is going to take. And he actually, in a written statement, was pretty unequivocal about it. He said that instead of a lame duck president and Senate nominating and confirming a new president and Senate, instead of a lame duck president and Senate nominating and confirming, a new president and Senate elected by the people only a few months from now should make that important decision. I can't think of a fairer or more democratic process. Ron Johnson is now saying that the Senate should move forward with a confirmation vote on a nominee from President Trump. And in the interview with Wispolitics, he said that he would be open to doing that even in a lame duck session of Congress. You know, that is after the election, before the new Senate is sworn in. So it's a definite change of position for Senator Johnson. He says the difference is that now the Senate and the president are in the same party.
And so, as you mentioned, though, he's certainly not the only one in this camp with a change from where he stood in 2016.
He's not. And I think it just underscores the importance of U.S. Supreme Court, nomination. I mean, these are lifetime appointments to the court and can change the, you know, the policy direction of the country for decades to come. You're talking about if President Trump follows through on this and if the Senate confirms, that would give a Republican president's 6-3, you know, edge on the court, or conservatives a 6-3 edge on the U.S. Supreme Court, which would kind of let them win in some of the close calls where, you know, right now one conservative justice can side with the liberals and tip the case the other way.
We are breaking down politics, the latest developments, with our State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who often gets us up to speed on Mondays. Are you voting absentee? Did you receive your ballot in the mail, or do you plan to vote in person on November 3rd? 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap with Sean Johnson ahead on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report, where we slow down political developments, taking them one at a time. We're looking at election news in our battleground state. What do you think about rapper Kanye West not qualifying to be on the presidential ballot here? Did you turn out for President Trump's campaign rally Thursday in Mozanie? Will you turn out today for Biden? How do you feel about the election? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is our guide. He is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, and he stays with us. So, Sean, you know, let's look here at the Green Party for a moment. The state Supreme Court had paused the mailing of roughly a million absentee ballots in order to decide whether the Green Party should be on the presidential ticket. Walk us through what happened.
Yeah, I think the short answer to that question is that it eventually got to the state Supreme Court. And, you know, the state Supreme Court is who paused the mailing of those ballots. But ultimately, in a 4-3 decision, the court said that the lawsuit that was filed by the Green Party's presidential candidates just came too late, that if the court were to act now, it would kind of throw things into chaos, that the election was, in essence, already happening. And so this 4-3 majority, which included conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn, who joined the court's liberals, said that, you know, that the challenge was too late, and therefore they were basically done with it. And so they didn't get into the particulars of the challenge. The court's majority didn't. But their ruling kind of opened the doors for these absentee ballots to go out, and they did.
Let's bring in a call. Andrew is with us from Wales. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well. What would you like to add?
Well, I was just calling to add a comment on the Supreme Court nomination at the national level. And the comment that I wanted to add was that both parties, they don't want to make any particular stand on legislation that might put them at risk of being voted out of office. And that's why I think they put so much emphasis on the Supreme Court, because if a decision comes out of the Supreme Court, they can say, well, the Supreme Court said not us, so don't vote us out of office.
So Andrew is saying here, like, shifting the focus, Sean.
Well, I mean, and a Supreme Court is just insulated from shifting political winds. I mean, even if they issue a decision that is unpopular politically, it doesn't matter. I mean, there are lifetime appointments on that court. And so, again, it just underscores the importance of the court, especially when you get a larger majority.
Well, switching back here to Wisconsin, you had mentioned that clerks have sent out absentee ballots. How is this election tracking? Are things on schedule?
Because the court that dealt with this Green Party challenge and did not hold up the process anymore, it seems like things are on schedule as much as they can be with, you know, especially with the absentee ballots.
And when, When would voters have to send in absentee ballots in order to be counted in November's election?
So there's a couple ways to look at that. You can look at when they're legally entitled to request or return absentee ballots, and then you can kind of look at the advice that the post office gives on when that should happen. The legal deadline for requesting an absentee ballot is going to be October 29th of this year. So the election is on the next week, is on November 3rd. If you want to vote absentee, practically speaking, you know, the post office says you should request that sooner. You know, the Elections Commission says, please try to mail your ballots, you know, at least 7 days ahead of time.
Is that due to sheer volume, or?
It's just kind of the unexpected. Okay. You know, there were cases here and there throughout Wisconsin in April where you heard of people saying, hey, I did everything right and I didn't get my ballot in time. And so, yeah, the post office actually says request your ballot at least 15 days before Election Day. That's not law. I mean, you have more time to request it. But that's the advice that they give, and they're the ones carrying the ballots.
We're moving through election news, campaign trail developments with Sean Johnson, our State Capitol Bureau Chief. You can join in on assembly races. Will Republicans achieve a so-called supermajority? Let's talk at 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report on the morning show. And as we do on Mondays, we're getting briefed on political news. And today we're focused on the election. And now races in the 99-member State Assembly. Will Republicans secure a 66-member supermajority? Will Democrats pick up seats in their Save the Veto campaign? Conversation is here. We're going to unpack it. 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, and he's our guide. So, Sean, looking at the Assembly, we're in the even-numbered year, which means the Assembly is on the ballot. What are you seeing in terms of competitive races?
Well, I mean, what you're seeing is a very small number of competitive races in Wisconsin, which, you know, is kind of the norm under this map and just the way that this decade has developed, you know. There are not that many races on the ballot throughout Wisconsin that are competitive. And so it puts kind of an intense focus on the handful that are, especially because depending on how they go, it could have big consequences for the state and statewide politics and that interplay between, you know, the Republican legislature and Democratic Governor Tony Evers.
So break down the numbers for us, because we've been hearing this term of a super majority. Where what does that look like?
So what it looks like is right now we have, or, you know, at the start of the last legislative session, there was a 63-36 Republican majority in the Assembly. And so what that means is they would need to pick up three seats to get that veto-proof majority. So, you know, it's they haven't been able to hit that number this decade on the current map, which they drew even in some good Republican years. But it is, I think, within reach, you know. And so that's kind of why you have this intense focus on just a handful of races. And so for Democrats, that means defending some of their incumbents in more vulnerable seats, but it also means that they are going after seats in suburban Milwaukee, which you wouldn't necessarily have thought would be a target for them, you know, maybe a decade ago or even like 5 years ago.
What do you see happening in suburban areas of the state?
I think what you see in suburban areas in Wisconsin is what you see in suburban areas elsewhere in the country, is the Republican Party coalesces around Donald Trump as their unquestioned leader, you have some suburban voters, traditional Republican voters, who are uncomfortable with Trump and uncomfortable with the direction of the Republican Party. It's not a huge number, but it's enough that you're starting to see some movement toward Democrats. I mean, it's why the Biden campaign is pursuing
suburban voters. And it's why you have assembly Democrats going after a handful of suburban seats, the seats held by Jim Ott, Rob Hutton, Dan Knodel. Those are in Mequon, Brookfield, and Germantown. These are seats that I think, you know, a few years ago, like I said, you wouldn't have expected Democrats to pursue, but they were pretty close in 2018. And so Democrats are trying to go kind of on offense in those seats as a means of, you know, their best defense, basically, to protect the assembly.
What have you seen happen in more rural areas of the state? What is the rural vote like?
So the rural vote is something that has been boosted by President Trump. I mean, he's done well in rural Wisconsin. You know, you look up in like the 7th Congressional District, which used to be held by Dave Obey. Of course, it's been redrawn and is more of a Republican district now. But also voters up there are shifting to the right in rural areas. And that translates to these assembly seats, too. Again, Republicans drew the map. And so, yes, they drew districts in these rural areas that favor them. But they've also benefited from a shift to the right in some of these rural areas. And so that's why they're looking to pick off seats in more, you know, with some more rural voters, let's say. And so they're looking at Steve Doyle, Nick Milroy, Beth Myers. And they're also sticking to that suburban theme. They're hoping to flip a seat back that Democrats won in 2018, held by Robin Vining. That's a district that way back when was held by Assemblyman Scott Walker.
Oh, my goodness.
So it gives you an idea of how that territory has changed.
Talking with Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. We're discussing election news, the campaign trail ahead of November, with your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Let's look at the state Senate. The state Senate elections are also very critical here. What is it looking like as it shapes up here? Because, you know, these are staggered because the state Senate is elected to 4-year terms.
Yeah. And again, in the state Senate, if you look at the number that they started this legislative session with, they are, again, 3 seats away from that veto proof majority. And they have a few districts where Republican victory is definitely plausible. So you're looking at the 10th Senate district. That's the district held by Patty Shockner. This is her first general election. She's a Democrat who won that seat in a special election. And again, this is a different set of suburbs, but she's in the suburbs of the Twin Cities. So we got this ongoing theme here. She's running against State Representative Rob Stafschult, a Republican. Then you've got the 30th Senate district held by Dave Hansen, currently in Green Bay. Dave Hansen has held that seat for a couple decades, a popular Democrat, has survived some Republican wave years unscathed. So he's leaving. His nephew is running, Jonathan Hansen, against Republican Eric Wimberger. And then you've got in the 32nd Senate district held by Jennifer Schilling, who retired.
Have you seen a number of retirements here in the state Senate or people leaving, lawmakers leaving the Senate?
You see some pretty noteworthy retirements. I mean, okay. Fred Risser is retiring. Fred Risser is the longest serving legislator in the country. So if he's stepping down, it gets your attention. And yeah, there've been some others. I think the Schilling and Hansen retirements are noteworthy because their districts are competitive and, you know, it makes it tougher, arguably, for Democrats to hold those seats when they don't have that benefit of an incumbent.
Let's take another call now. Troy is joining us from Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to share something. I'm a Democrat, and both my parents were Trump supporters. And, I had conversations with them. I mean, both my parents are boomers. They had, like, an eighth-grade education, both of them. And it was really interesting. My dad's even a Vietnam vet, and it was kind of interesting that I would have this conversation, and they're like, well, you're a Democrat, or I said I was actually a Democratic Socialist, and they said, well, you're a communist, and I was like, whoa. So anyways, the whole point I'm trying to make is I had a conversation with them, and then I pointed it out to my dad, because my dad's like pro-union and pro-social security, and they're actually pro-socialism, you know, and I, after explaining that to him, they didn't even realize that. And it was just really, I like, you know, and they're getting older and they just was like started watching Fox News and they started thinking like, oh, the whole world is. Anyways, I just want to make a point that I think everybody should have conversations with family members that, you know, support one, you know, Trump or something. And I think you're going to find out that a lot of them are just, they're not dumb or they're not in a cult. They're just
Troy, I want to jump in here for Sean in, you know, Troy saying that, you know, people should have kitchen table conversations with their loved ones about politics. Do you think that might be something that would bring fraught relationships? Or is this something that, you know, what Troy is doing here in terms of trying to share his views with his parents, is that common?
Well, I mean, it's a polarized world we're living here in 2020 and just into Wisconsin in general for quite a while now. So I'll come down on the pro conversation camp, I guess, side of things.
We're still the swingiest of swing states. Well, let's look at the presidential campaign trail. We see Biden coming to the state today. We've seen Trump and Pence in the state as well. What do you make of the campaigning you're seeing here in Wisconsin?
I think they think it's close. I think they both think it's winnable for either campaign now or they wouldn't be here is, I guess, my read of it, you know. The Trump campaign has been here the most, President Trump most recently, but Mike Pence is, I think, I'm not exaggerating, is in Wisconsin weekly now. I think we thought it was possible we would not see Joe Biden in this campaign cycle after the Democratic National Convention was canceled, and it just seemed like travel wasn't happening because of COVID. But we saw him in Wisconsin after the unrest in Kenosha following the shooting of Jacob Blake. And now we're going to see him again. And so perhaps it won't even be the last time. The way that the race is looking, Wisconsin is one of a handful of states that are considered toss-ups by, you know, some people who watch this stuff closely. I'm thinking of the Larry Sabato, who watches this at the University of Virginia and has this crystal ball that keeps an eye on electoral races, and he has Wisconsin, or had recently Wisconsin, one of four states that were actual toss-ups. So polling has consistently favored Joe Biden here, but it's close enough that you see the candidates here, you see them spending time and money in Wisconsin, and, you know, I think that's a pretty good read that they think it's close.
Well, Sean, thank you for joining us and keeping an eye on politics for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He's co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.